Okay, there are three categories of things. There's the fragile, the robust, and the anti-fragile. Most people, when you ask them what's the opposite of fragile, they say robust, resilient. It's not. The strong doesn't benefit from disorder. So there's a category of object that need disorder as fuel for improvement, for functioning, for anything. Everything organic communicates with the environment with stressors. So we need variability and randomness. So the class of things benefits from volatility. And the fragile is what's harmed by volatility.
So it's kind of beyond robust. It's something that benefits from changes and disorder in society and the world.
Exactly.
But what's interesting about your book, this applies to a whole range of things. You know, you come from a financial background. You've been a trader. I mean, how does this apply, for example, to banks?
Okay, very simple. I was an option trader for all my life. So we actually had a word for anti-fragile. It's called long gamma, long volatility. And we had a word for fragile. It's a short gamma and short volatility. But it took me a while to figure out that what is harmed by volatility tends to be fragile. Any time that you have more downside than upside from random events, you are fragile. This coffee
so
cup.
So let's just be clear for people who don't understand some of the terminology. So if there's more, you're going to lose more than you're going to gain, you're fragile.
Exactly. For example, if there's...
But crucially, what events are you talking about?
Any random event. But so you are fragile to that random event. Say, for example, if the market goes down 10% and you're harmed a lot more than you gain if the market goes up 10%, you have an asymmetry. You have a lot more downside than upside.
Yeah.
More downside than upside in your investment strategy in anything.
We would assume that, you know, it's not a good idea to be in a fragile state, so we'd be seeking robust. But you're saying we need to go beyond that.
Exactly, because the UK did not get to where it is today thanks to being robust. But it's thanks to
robust
having
isn't
things.
A bad place to be, though.
No, it's a very bad place to be.
Why?
Because robust is good for engineered products. You want a Brooklyn Bridge to be robust, but you want...
Well, I don't want my financial affairs, my life, to be robust.
You want it to be anti-fragile. You want the economy, otherwise you won't have growth. And,
okay,
let's say, what
is anti-fragile? So if robust isn't good enough in life,
exactly.
What is...
Okay, let's talk about this category mistake. Mistaking the robust for anti-fragile, and I call it mistaking your cat for a washing machine. Okay, I have a washing
mistaking
machine at
your
home.
Cat
for a washing machine.
Yeah, okay.
I have a washing machine at home.
Yeah.
It will never improve, usage will never improve it. And it needs constant monitoring. Whereas the organic needs variability. We need seasons.
But
we need four seasons.
Nassim,
we
your
need,
cat yes. can't wash your clothes.
No, but what I'm saying is the organic, your body, is different from the engineered.
Okay, so you're not comparing the function. You're just saying the cat is a much more adaptable.
Exactly. Adaptable or needs some amount of disorder. And let's see, if I deprive you of disorder, physical disorder, your bones will become brittle. If you spend 6 months in bed, or watching The Soprano, 53 episodes. After 6 months, your bones are going to be very brittle. If the forest doesn't have regular steady fires, what happens is that the flammable material accumulates, so the big one becomes a lot more uncontrollable.
Hmm.
So some systems require disorder. Okay, it requires, and the economy requires disorder and learns from disorder.
Okay, well let's look at the economy and finance.
Yes.
When you talk about anti-fragile systems and institutions, what are you talking about?
Let me give you two comparisons. What's fragile, what's anti-fragile? Air transportation, very anti-fragile. How? Because it uses every mistake for improvement. So if there's a plane crash, it kills people, future lives will be saved because the probability of the next crash is going to be lower. So a system that converts mistakes into, for improvements, is a very anti-fragile system. And the restaurant business, for example, mistakes made by restaurateurs help both cuisine and help us get better meals because we're not eating the cafeteria.
You mean because in the restaurant business is such a high turnover, you know, a business sets up, if it doesn't succeed, it
exactly.
collapses.
There's this evolutionary
and people look
pressure.
And say, well, what's the
exactly.
Problem?
So every restaurant bankruptcy improved the overall food quality.
But isn't that true in everything? Isn't that true in banking as well?
No, it's not true in banking.
Why not?
Because if a bank crashes, we saw what happened with Northern Rock. The bank crashes, the probability of the next bank crashing is higher. The system overall is fragile.
Because there's too much interdependency.
And because
so you lose one component and the rest can fall.
Exactly. So you can figure out, without going into theories or much, which systems are anti-fragile and which systems are fragile and which systems are robust.
Now more from Nassim Taleb and his theory of anti-fragility. He describes his latest book as a guidebook to life in an uncertain world. I wanted to know how he applies his theories to his personal life. But first, what do his ideas tell us about how we should deal with the big question of our time, debt?
Since the 1980s, debt has been growing at a very rapid pace in society. And of course, we paid a heavy price recently, and it's not over, converting private debt to public debt. And since the Babylonians, we've learned that debt destabilizes and the system eventually blows up from debt.
So what's the root of the destabilization? Is it?
Let's compare two individuals. One person has debt, or one company has debt or something, and the other one doesn't have debt, just issued equity. The one with debt cannot afford to make a forecast mistake. One forecast mistake and he's blown up. So he has to be very precise in understanding future environment. Now, the person who has equity can make mistakes without being harmed in that violent way. Given that predictability has been decreasing with complexity, debt is not a good thing. Debt and complexity don't marry well. The way I look at debt is the exact opposite of redundancy. In nature, we have redundancies, two kidneys, two lungs.
Yeah.
Leverage is inverse redundancy.
Okay.
One of the big themes is about exposure to risk.
Yes.
Of the book. And this is one of the ways in which you think systems can become anti-fragile by being exposed to risk. You've got some great examples of this. You say that Roman builders of aqueducts and bridges were forced to sleep under their bridges.
Yes, there's a lot of fragility in society that comes from the fact that we have a category of people who have upside without downside, namely bankers or other people. Effectively, the joint stock company that Adam Smith was not in love with. Okay.
Okay, hold on. The joint stock company, which introduced the concept of limited liability.
Exactly.
So that the people who own the company, the liability is only contained within the company.
Exactly.
Their personal assets aren't at stake. And you're saying that's created dangerous risks in the economy.
I'm not against the joint stock company, but Adam Smith understood the difference between a bonus earner, someone who's managing a company,
and being paid a portion of the profits.
Exactly. And he can game the system and game the numbers as compared to an entrepreneur who has what I call skin in the game.
Skin in the game. And this is a very key concept for you.
It is to me, to stabilize society, you have to introduce skin in the game.
So let's just look at the bankers. So you say the problem with the bankers is they're using other people's money.
They're using the taxpayers' money. The problem is we have two.
Because they're underwritten ultimately. They're too big to fail. They're underwritten ultimately. If there is a problem, the taxpayer's going to step in and bail them out. By which time they've already banked all the bonuses they were paid in the previous decade. But what's the prescription for this?
Very simple. The government says if a bank or an entity, any entity, is so vital for the economy that we'd have to bail it out if it fails, then automatically all employees are de facto civil servants. You see? Simple.
Right.
Okay. If we have to bail you out, taxpayer, you belong to the taxpayer. Taxpayer decides on your salaries. All right? So that would force companies and banks to be smaller. Small enough to fail, so they could pay themselves bonuses, and it becomes a problem between them and their shareholders, not a problem between them and the taxpayer.
And the body of
Exactly. So this is a simple rule. The problem, all the risk models we had in the banks and still have, all these systems are designed by people who are never harmed by the problems. And all I'm calling for is application of a very simple rule, Hammurabi's rule. Hammurabi.
Well, it was pretty severe, Hammurabi's rule, because Hammurabi was the Babylonian king who said that you'd be killed if the buildings that you built fell down.
I know, but everything was born from that rule 3,800 years ago.
Yeah, but you're not actually saying that bankers should be killed if their banks collapse.
No. The last time they beheaded them was in Catalonia, I guess, in the 1500s. But the point is that you should never be harming others without incurring personal harm.
Now, but it's quite interesting because in the book, what you draw these principles, which are drawn from, you know, history, but and also from finance and economics, and you apply them to your personal life. You talk about the way you eat and the way you exercise, for example.
Exactly.
Tell me what an anti-fragile exercise regime is.
You should, first of all, not go jogging. It's not natural. You need variability, maximum variability. I usually either sprint or walk. I lift weights occasionally, but not frequently.
Right.
And once in a while,
once in a while, you go down and lift some really heavy weights.
Very, very heavy. Imitating.
How heavy?
Very, very heavy. Imitating someone lifting a stone. I look at what people did in nature.
So you're going back to, this isn't just ancient times, you're going back to prehistory for your diet.
The ancients were good. It was good enough with the ancients.
So you're either sleeping and walking around or you're sprinting after an antelope.
Yes. I try not to work for long hours. You try to work intensely for short hours.
I try not to work for long hours. So you focus it. But you also talk about staying up all night sometimes.
You have to have variability because we lived in a stochastic environment.
That means an environment sensitive to shocks, big shocks.
Exactly. And you want to know what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get food sporadically, sometimes steadily.
So you don't eat regularly then?
Yeah, so sometimes you go through periods of fast.
Would you do that?
Yeah, I go through periods of fast, and I try to fast as much as I can.
So this is like the Taleb diet?
No, not my diet. I imitate the Greek Orthodox diet, okay? And the Greek Orthodox diet bans, it makes you vegan for
it's 2 days a week, isn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday and Friday.
You have no protein?
No protein. No protein, no fat.
But you also famously said once that you wouldn't eat any food stuff that the ancient Greeks didn't have a name for.
Ancient or Hebrew name, yes. Yeah. For example, oranges are invented by modern civilization.
So no oranges, no tomatoes. I bet you make an exception.
But I make exceptions. But this is not the point. The point isn't in the diet. The point is that our system needs some variability.
Right.
And you need some stochasticity. You inject it in your life.
Nassim Taleb.